Hi, I'm Cameron Parker, and I'm sitting here with Miss Morton in her home on 11/1/2017, and we're here to talk about Miss Jenny's life. So tell me, Miss Jenny, tell me a little bit about your upbringing.
Okay, I was born in Detroit, Michigan, 1933. I was number 7 of 11 children, and I was like, I liked my life. I really liked my life. I felt spoiled by my mother, even though we had so many children in the house. And I liked my brothers and sisters. I had four siblings that were born to a first marriage, and they had left home, so I didn't even know them until like during or after World War II. And then when I met my brothers, it was like, wow, I fell in love, you know? I mean, wonderful. And one of my brothers, I believe he was gay, but we were all during a time when you better not say, you know, you just don't tell people anything like that. I didn't know I was gay, lesbian, whatever. You know, we really didn't use labels and, or even think about it. You just did what you did, you know, and you forgot about it in the light of day. It's like what you did in the dark, it didn't come to light. So, it was kind of racist around there. We inherited a Jewish ghetto in Detroit, and we lived in a 4-family flat owned by a Jewish guy, which is when I first learned what it meant to the N-word, because he called me that, and I asked my mother what did it mean, and she had me look it up in the dictionary. And I found out that it was, they said an ignorant person. I like that. I really like that. So I started calling all white people ignorant or nigger, because that's what they had called me. So if it meant you're ignorant, then that's what you are, not me. Anyway, I was pretty gifted. So I moved through school like easily. When I was, I think when I was 14, it was when I started having a girlfriend. And she lived across town in Detroit, Michigan. And we did this thing where we didn't know we were like in love or anything, but we did this thing where she would stay with me on the weekend in my neighborhood, and I would stay with her the next weekend in her neighborhood. And I think one evening we slept together, and I think my mother must have heard us making noise, making love. And the next day she told me I couldn't see her anymore. And, but she didn't tell me why. She just said, you can't see her. I said, well, I'll go to her. No, she didn't say you can't see her. She said she could not come to my house anymore. And I said, well, I'll go to her house. She said, no, you don't understand. You cannot see her at all. So that was the end of that. And, Shirley was her name. She lived in the same, subdivision that my cousin and my grandmother lived in. So I could still go and babysit my grandmother, but I couldn't see Shirley. So I developed this method of how to get rid of people. I would get angry and cuss them out. And that really followed me throughout my life. I realized that, especially when I was in therapy, that whenever I wanted to get rid of somebody, I didn't want them talking to me anything, I would call them bad names. And not just say I don't like you or anything. I would just say nasty words. That's all. So the reason I stopped, well, one reason I stopped seeing Shirley was because of my mother. The reason I stopped messing with girls, there were other girls in the neighborhood where we would play with each other, you know. Pat pussy is what they called it, and I know that sounds nasty, but that's what they said. Anyway, my upstairs neighbor, Pearlie, me and her would do the thing, and we just have fun with it. Like, one time she said, oh, wash my coochie and over the wash pan and rinse it, and then we'll comb the hair and put a bow on it, put a ribbon on it. And that's what we did. We just fell out laughing, okay? So it was more like fun. We didn't think we were doing anything wrong the way society would have thought we were doing something wrong because we were kind of playing with each other. So you know what? Anyway, okay, so that is kind of my upbringing. And somewhere in there when I became 16. Oh, yeah. When I was 15, my sister jumped in the car with her boyfriend and said, come on, we're just going around the block. I go, no, we got to be home. We can't get in people's car. And she said, come on, we're just going around the block and coming back. We did not. We went a couple blocks. We picked up a guy who was 19 years old. We drove to Belle Island, which is a park in Detroit. My sister and her boyfriend jumped out, left me with this guy, and he proceeded to try to rape me. He tore my panties off and tried to push his thing into me. And I fought and I fought and I fought. And next thing I know, here's a flashlight in the window and the cops were there. Okay, that was horrible. They took me to jail, called my mother, called my brother. They did something to me, they said, to prevent venereal disease. Shot something up in me. I don't know what it was. And I was only 14 years old, so I didn't know a lot about stuff. I knew rape was bad, and that's what that guy had done. He did not penetrate me, but he hurt. And so then I wouldn't have anything to do with anybody that was sexual until I was 17 years old. No, I was 16. Anyway, the boys started calling me queer. He said, if you don't do anything with boys, that means you're doing, we know you are hiding out with those girls all the time and you guys are playing pussy. You're playing with each other. And so that makes you, I turned to one of my basketball playing guys and I said, what's queer? What is queer anyway? And he said, that means that you only like girls, you don't like boys. And so then that's when I decided, okay, I gotta do boys. And when I did, I got pregnant. 16 years old, I got pregnant. I had a baby at 17. And when I was 5 months pregnant, I met my husband. I liked him and, well, I don't know, I guess I decided I couldn't like women or girls. And I had to like boys. Okay. So I had the baby, and he is now 67 years old. I'm 84, he's 67. And I married my husband when the baby was a year old, and I had gotten pregnant again. So We left Detroit, moved to St. Louis, Missouri, and got married. So now I have one kid, one on the way. I was a married woman in a strange place. And I just got into being married. I got into being a wife. I got into being a mother. And that was my thing. So along about when me and my husband had our fifth kid, and I was 25 years old, and I was on the way to having a fifth child. Actually, I was 24, and I had two boys and two girls, and I was about to have another kid that we didn't ever know what you were gonna have then. There was none of that ultrasound and you're gonna have a girl or a boy. You just knew when it popped out what it was gonna be. And so that's when I started seeing, no, wait a second, I'm getting ahead of myself. My daughter was I'm getting confused now, so let me back up a bit. Is that okay? All right. When my daughter was 6 years old, a six-year-old girl moved into the neighborhood, and her mother became my friend. She woke up the passion for women in me again. I thought it had died. As a matter of fact, I would do mental flagellation, perhaps, not hitting myself, but just talking to myself about, you can't do this, this is sick, and you got to stay with men. And I mean, it was torturous. I mean, people today are lucky that they can be who they are and not have to go through what us older people had to go through about lifestyle and who we wanted to love, you know, live with. Anyway, I don't feel comfortable saying other people's name, so I'll just say she was my neighbor, and it's when they had decided they were gonna destroy an area in St. Louis called Mill Creek. So a lot of the people from that area had to sell their houses. What do you call that when they make you sell your house? Whatever that is. And so they bought in the block that I lived in. And I lived in my in-law's house. It was a duplex. I lived downstairs. They lived upstairs, me and my husband and my children. And so by then, I already had that fifth kid, and I just started seeing women again, but staying and determined I'm going to stay married, right? So, of course, they all always wanted me to get a divorce, and why are you with a man, and you could be with, well, you know, I like being with him, too, and That's basically when I sort of came out, so to speak, again. Came out again. So I don't know what else I can tell you about that other than there were many women in my life. I met them at sometimes straight bars, and they worked as bartenders, and those same people would have house parties, and when you go, it was mostly lesbian and gay people there. There were men and women, but everybody was gay, and that's how you met. We danced, we had DJs, and most of the time, the bar wasn't considered gay. It could have been a so-called straight bar, but full of gay and lesbian people. But there were also like Bill's Bar, which was on Eastern Avenue, which is now Martin Luther King, near Kings Highway Boulevard. It was a meeting place, but it also had good food. And everything was cheap, you know, like you could probably get a hamburger for 75 cents, you know, back in 1956, for goodness sake. What am I talking about? It was 1956. It wasn't 66. So I have 5 children. I'm married to a man, and I'm screwing around with women. And my husband knew. He knew it. He didn't say anything, but he knew it. In fact, one time I came home quite late. I had left him keeping the children. I think he wanted to get out himself. So when I came through the door, he said, where were you? And I said, I mentioned 2 women's name that he knew. And he said, I was going to say, if you were with a man, I was going to slap the shit out of you. But you better have been with a woman. Really? Okay. So that was basically my life. We went, okay, we got to remember, first of all, the civil rights movement was not until 1964. So if you're black, you better be quiet about whatever, not just being lesbian and gay. You better be quiet about a lot of things or you're going to land in jail, you know. And I wasn't that much of a drinker, but I was a dancer, so I had fun when I went to the bars, you know, just to dance and not get drunk. But a lot of people did turn into alcoholics. It was kind of sad to see people so messed up off of alcohol. Not only that, it was a big epidemic of opiates in the form of heroin. I think that's considered an opiate. And at that time, people would just sit around and nod after they had shot up with this drug. And it had been going on since World War II, which was World War II ended in, I think, 1944-45, and that's when especially the black military men came home, and they knew how to use heroin. Now, my mother said then, they're not going to do anything about this until it hits white people. When it hits white people, they're going to do something about it. So now I am living in St. Louis, Missouri, to hear white people talk about getting rid of an opiate drug, which is heroin. And my mother would be 100 and some years old today if she had lived, but she was right. Anytime something hits, like a hanging down pants, they're kind of ready to do something about that now, but I wish they would. So I got to renew my thought process. I got to forbid it.
We're going to take a break right quick, and then we'll be back. Okay, we are back with Miss Jenny Morton, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about her relationship with her husband.
St. Louis venture. Yeah. Now I have 5 children. I have a husband. I have girlfriends all over St. Louis. And then I get a new girlfriend. And she said to me, Actually, her name is Cookie. That's her real name is, I won't say her real name, but she went by Cookie, and she still goes by Cookie. And she was in one of the historical black colleges studying to be a teacher. So she, and she lived in Kenlock, a place called Kenlock. I think it has a different name now, but a lot of, it was a black community near Kirkwood, Missouri, which is basically all white, but Kenlock was all black. And so Cookie came into the city because her girlfriend was a bartender on the same block I lived in. There was a bar. And so that's how I met Cookie. She's sitting at the bar in my neighborhood. I went into the bar and was talking to her girlfriend, and she wanted to know who I was. So that was interesting. So Cookie started coming to my house. And one day we're sitting in the living room, and she said, "How many girlfriends did you have anyway?" And I started, well, maybe she said, "How many have you slept with?" And I started ticking off, "How many?" And then she left. Now, Cookie was only about 23. And I was like 9, 10 years older than her. Or 11. I was 11 years older than Cookie. But she was in college still, and she was grown. Once she left, my husband came in and said, "You slept with 50 women?" So he was listening all the time to what me and his girlfriend were talking about. So that's how I knew he probably, I denied everything. I said I was just talking. That didn't really happen. I was just saying stuff to her. Well, see, he couldn't make me admit that was the truth, you know, without force. So we left it alone. And, but Cookie became my ace. And this is sad to say, but she was 23. I was 34, and I had never masturbated. She taught me how to masturbate. That was nice. That was very interesting. I never knew that could happen. And I do remember touching it and getting so far and saying, "Oh, I can't stand that," and stopping. She taught me how to finish it. And that became my thing after that. And she went back to college, and she would call me and talk dirty on the phone. Okay, she was very interesting. And as a matter of fact, I talked to Cookie the other day. This is 2017, I talked to her. And she's still my best friend, one of my best friends. Anyway, when my children, when I had more kids, my number 6 child, she said, "That's my baby." And so he became her favorite thing, you know, taking him on different excursions to Forest Park and all kinds of different stuff that she would do with him. But I still saw my neighbor. I don't know. What could you call me? Could you call me a slut, maybe? I was just into doing it. And even with my husband, I think a lot of that was sexually childhood, early childhood sexualization, because I'm going to back up. When I babysat at 12 years old, one of the kids' uncles came over when everybody was asleep, and I was waiting on the parents to return home, and he molested me, and I was 12 years old. And when he couldn't penetrate me, he used his tongue on my, can I say clit? Okay, there. Used his tongue there, and that was good. I mean, I like that, but I won't say that I like being molested necessarily by a grown man, because I stopped going there. I didn't want to go, and I didn't want to tell my mother why. I didn't want to go and babysit those kids. And they were right next door to my mother, but I just didn't go anymore. So what happened was she would bring the children to my mother's house, and I would babysit them at my mother's house. And that's how I got around that. The second time I was molested by a grown man was when I was babysitting my grandmother, and my aunt's husband attempted to molest me. I was asleep in my grandmother's room, and I felt something on my private parts. But when I really fully awake, I slept on a cot, and my grandmother slept in the bed. When I was really awake, I could see it was still dark in the house, and I could see a body leaving the bedroom. And I went to the bathroom. I had to be 12, because when I went to the bathroom, my period had started. And then I kept saying to myself, maybe it was my period. And then I go, no, that was his hands on me. He made this happen. He made me bleed. Actually, he didn't make me bleed. I had just started my period. I washed my pajamas out and hung them in the bathroom on the shower. My aunt came into my grandmother's room and said, how many pads do you need, one or two? And that's all she said. I think she kind of knew. Okay, the next time I heard anything about this uncle and aunt was when I lived in Oregon, Portland, Oregon. My mother called me, and she asked me if he molested me, and I stuck to the lie. I said no. So I had told my sister that it happened. And she said, you need to tell Mother the truth, because Aunt Leela's 5-year-old granddaughter came to live with them, and he started molesting her, and he penetrated her at six years old. And for the whole time she lived there, he molested her. So, Mother needs to know what happened to you, because Aunt Leela doesn't believe her husband molested this girl for her whole time. But when she graduated from high school, Aunt Leela asked her, what was she like? She said, I would like to visit my mother and my siblings in Cleveland, Ohio. And she let her go. And that's when she told her mother what had happened. My cousin had been molested by the same uncle that had molested me. And I had lied about it. I hadn't lied about it. I just hadn't mentioned it to anybody but one of my sisters. And that sister was talking to me and saying, you need to tell her. The girl has tried to kill herself. She's on drugs. And she insists that he did it, and they are saying she's lying. Okay. I said, put her back on the phone, my mother. And by then, I'm crying, and everybody else was crying. And my mother said, I wondered why when I said, come on, you got to go take care of Grandma. Well, you fell on the floor and started kicking and screaming and saying, I don't want to go and babysit Grandma no more. I don't want to babysit Grandma no more. And you just kept saying that. She said, I thought something was wrong, but I didn't want to go there. And she said, you know, you can tell me anything. She said, my kids can eat chicken shit in the gutter with chickens, and I'll still love them. So that was a heavy. And there's probably a lot of what's going on today where people won't tell. And they wait so many years. Okay, by that time, I'm 40 years old. This has happened when I was 12. And that poor little girl, you know, from 5, 6 years old, she had to go through what, you know, what I went through briefly, and I didn't have to live with it. I could leave. So, and then for them not to believe her, well, see, that's what they'll tell you. They'll tell you nobody's going to believe you. And that's why I told my one sister, and I didn't say anything to anybody else, because they're going to think it's your fault, you know. So, anyway, that was a lesson learned right there. I really don't know whatever happened to my cousin after that, whether she remained on drugs, whatever. I never contacted them. So,
do you think that relationship with your mother, though, that she said something so caring about that, transitioned or translated into how she felt about your other side, your lifestyle in the LGBT community?
Well, she didn't know about that. I told her then. I said, no, after that, when I was living in Oregon, I overdosed on some medicine because I couldn't deal with myself being lesbian and having children and having lovers and allowing that to happen to one of my young cousins. And so I overdosed, had my stomach pumped out. And after that, I talked to my mother on the phone, and she asked me, why did I do that? And I said, because I'm a lesbian and I can't deal with it. So I also told her that I was in therapy and trying to deal with the fact that there were two sides to me, liking men and liking women, and feeling like it was wrong, all of it. So, but that's when I was living in Oregon, and I was also going to college. I was studying to be a programmer, analyst. A computer programmer analyst, and raising, I took 5 kids out there with me, and so I was having a hard time, you know. I had come off of ODN, lost my job, going to college. I had to get on welfare briefly, which I didn't like at all. But I had to do that in order to go to college and get food stamps for my children to eat. So, but that was my first, when I first got to Oregon in the 1970s. But back to St. Louis, and still being with my husband, married to him, and dating women, I had a 6th child, then I had a 7th child in 1965. That was the last one. When he was a year old, I left my husband because it was, he was abusive verbally and physically, and I didn't want my children seeing what was going on there. I didn't want them seeing us bickering and learning how to be like that, and so I left. And one thing I can say, once I left, he and I got along fine because we both realized there were 7 children involved in this relationship and that we needed to deal with their special upbringing and not deal with our problems that we had with each other. But to me, it was so much better living away from him than and being who I was and than living with him. And all that stuff about me sleeping with different women had stopped when Cookie showed up. But Cookie and I, we moved together. I mean, when I left him, she found a place for us to live. And that didn't last long. I got a job in a bar and met a woman that I eventually moved to Oregon with. So it felt like, this is weird because my kid's father, I call him my husband because he was my husband until he died. And he helped me pack up and leave. He helped me pack up in boxes. He shipped my boxes via Greyhound. He even told me, you know, the best thing for you to do is ship this stuff via Greyhound. And I was, my girlfriend had already gone to, Kathleen, she had already gone to Oregon. And she had found the house. But she didn't have a job. I'm the one who had the job and the money. I had a job here at Chase Park Plaza Hotels. I was a chef. And I actually made $13 an hour, which in 1966, that's when I got the job, was a lot of money. But now it's 1970, and every year being union, that's why I hate union busting. Unions were, you know, that's how people made it. Now, you see too many homeless because they can't walk off a job, out of a high school and go to a job. If we still had unions, you know, I'm a union person, you know. So, Kathleen had found a house in Oregon, so that meant we were shipping sheets, towels, kitchenware, and